Governor Scott Walker is slamming prosecutors for their accusations of illegal campaign coordination during the 2012 recall election. The governor appeared this morning on Fox and Friends to respond to the allegation that he was at the center of a criminal scheme in John Doe court documents that were unsealed by an appeals court yesterday.
This is a prime example of what happens when you take on the big government special interest. They're looking for ways to come at us. They'll continue to do it. They did it, 2 years ago in the recall election. They're going to do it again now. We got another tough election this fall. And so they're going to come at it with just about everything out there. And the media is, at least many in the media, are willing accomplices to this.
I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk with two guests from different political perspectives about this charge that the governor was at the center of a criminal scheme to bypass state election laws during the 2011 and 2012 recall elections. And we will also talk about other top state and national and international news of the week. And we'll welcome your input in the stories that you want to talk about at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guests. We have with us David Blaska, former Dane County Supervisor. His Blaska's Bring It blog can be found at ibmadison.com. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And with us also, Ruth Conniff, editor of the Progressive Magazine. Good morning, Ruth.
Good morning.
All right. Well, let's first, Ruth Conniff, the headlines in the papers are, saying Governor Walker was at the center of a criminal scheme to bypass state election laws. That can't be going over too well.
It's not really the way you want to launch your national campaign. No, headlines around the country saying you're at the center of a criminal scheme. And there's a lot of stories comparing Governor Walker to Governor Chris Christie. This is a big deal. This is a huge smoking gun. Walker did his best to try to spin it this morning on Fox and Friends by saying that this is an example of big government special interests coming after him. But these are the words of a Republican prosecutor, Fran Schmitz, who was shortlisted to be a federal judge by George W. Bush. So this is not a big government special interest or union thug or any of the words that Walker and his allies try to use to dismiss the folks who have been pursuing this case. This is this is the smoking gun. I mean, this is what didn't come out in the first John Doe investigation. It is evidence that the governor himself, in his own words, in an email to Karl Rove, puts himself at the center of this illegal effort to coordinate big money, millions of dollars from these interest groups, bringing them into his campaign. And the campaigns in the email to Karl Rove that he's referring to are for Senate Republicans in the recall elections to violate campaign finance law in the state. It shows that Walker himself was involved in this. And I think one thing that's really important to realize about this is the evidence that the federal judge, Rudolph Randa, who tried to stop the investigation from going forward, this is the kind of evidence that he ordered the prosecutors to destroy. And that order to destroy evidence was overturned by the Seventh Circuit Court. And because it was, we now see this email showing Walker at the center of this.
Yeah, so this is a big smoking gun, Ruth, says David Blaska. What do you say?
No smoke. No gun. I'm incredulous. I really am. And I'm a former, the former everything, I guess. For almost 20 years, I was a practicing daily newspaper journalist. I guess if it's bad, if they can knock Scott Walker, that's what makes the news. This entire investigation has been discredited. There is no criminal scheme. We have a federal judge for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. We have a federal appellate court, a 3-member panel. 3-0, unanimous, basically saying, investigation is over. John Doe is done. What these conservative groups, including Club for Growth, are guilty of is free speech. You've got one group of like-minded citizens talking to another group of like-minded citizens about issues that they share in common and candidates that they support. It's incredible to me, and Judge, I'll close with Judge Randa in his ruling. He said that that this prosecution is motivated by the conservatives' exercise of their constitutional rights, fully protected by the First Amendment. The prosecutor's retaliatory motive is evidenced through their choice to target nearly the entire right-wing center of political advocacy, and they ignored almost identical activity on the left.
Yeah, so this was just free speech, Ruth.
Well, that is, in fact, the argument that the conservatives are making. It's the argument that the Wall Street Journal likes to make. It's the argument that Club for Growth makes. And it's the argument that Judge Rudolph Randa, who's a member of the Federalist Society and the only judge in the state of Wisconsin who regularly flies to these Koch-funded judicial retreats for, you know, conservative ideologues, it's the argument that he makes in his amazing, outrageous decision in which he orders the destruction of evidence. It is not, however, Wisconsin law. And although a lot of conservatives, including Karl Rove, including the Club for Growth, want to argue that we should have unlimited money in elections and that money is the same thing as speech, so although these are not just like-minded groups talking to each other, this is a plea for funds from Scott Walker to Karl Rove to essentially pour millions of dollars into Wisconsin to take over our political system here. It may be that ultimately the conservatives can prevail, you know, as they have, you know, chipped away at campaign finance in recent federal Supreme Court decisions, but in Wisconsin, it is still the state of the law, and the law is very clear that this coordination is illegal.
Oh, hang on there. Wisconsin law cannot trump the First Amendment. That was the ruling of the 7th District Appellate Court. You can't. This is an abridgment of free speech. Money is speech.
This is not a closed case. As the Washington Post said yesterday in an editorial, there is no such thing as a rule of law if this doesn't go forward. The Club for Growth is saying, let's quash this whole thing. This should be legal, and therefore this investigation shouldn't go forward. That's what's before the court now. This investigation is not over. It is still going forward. And we have this release of documents because of that Club for Growth lawsuit. But this is not over.
Yeah, so it's not over, David?
Well, it is, because everything from McCutcheon to decision, Citizens United against the FEC. First of all, to say that you're going to control money in campaigns is to say that you're going to control speech. This microphone I'm speaking into right now, Ruth, did not come for free. Who's going to decide who has too much speech and who does not have enough? And that's the socialization of speech. And bottom line, Ruth, is that you folks don't trust the people of Wisconsin.
Ruth, I'm sorry. Let David finish, and then we'll have you respond.
I'm just trying to close off here. You folks don't trust the people of Wisconsin to sift and winnow for themselves. We have a plaque not far from where I'm sitting right now. I trust the voters. You know, they elected Ron Johnson, and then 2 years later, they elected Tammy Baldwin. God bless them.
Ruth?
I mean, it is the fundamental argument. Should somebody like McCutcheon be able to spend millions and millions of dollars to influence elections? Should out-of-state billionaires be able to pour unlimited money into the state of Wisconsin to change the government of our state to suit their interests from outside the state? Should there be any limit whatsoever on campaign spending? And if you believe money equals speech, then you believe that people like Karl Rove and McCutcheon should be able to speak much louder and drown out ordinary voices. Money does not equal speech. This is not a First Amendment issue. And that's why in state after state, they're taking polls of voters who say that they disagree with the Citizens United decision and that we need a constitutional amendment to assert that corporations are not people, they don't have the same rights as individuals, and that money does not equal speech.
Let me also, though, look at the political implications of this rather than the courts are looking at the case itself. What about, that doesn't look good, does it, David? That, you know, there's a, you know, with the governor emailing Karl Rove talking about, you know, what they're going to do. How is this going to affect him politically?
Well, golly, I guess you can't email someone telling you what your plans are. I mean,
you think that looks okay to voters?
It should. Mm-hmm. Is this America or not? What doesn't look good to me are these three pre-dawn raids conducted contemporaneously on the morning of October 3rd, 2013, between 6 and 6:30 in the morning, in the dark, by armed sheriff's deputies. School-aged children were home in at least two of the residences. School buses passed by their houses during the course of the raids. The raids lasted over 2.5 hours. Bright searchlights were trained on the houses while these deputies took computers. They took cell phones from everyone in the house, even if they weren't targets of the investigation. What are we about here in America when we invade private homes looking for computers for evidences that you talked to so-and-so? Are we looking at an imminent shipment of heroin into the community? Has a schoolroom full of little girls been kidnapped? No, we're talking about the political process. We're talking about people of like minds getting together and talking. You know, George III, King George III would have loved a rule that says Group A can't talk to Group B. And by the way, this meeting here in Independence Hall is illegal because you're coordinating. Or to use a more freighted word, you're colluding. You're colluding. I call it communicating. I hope we can do that in America.
Yeah. Well, Ruth, political implications of this, the revelations in these court documents that were unsealed yesterday.
I think the political implications are lousy for Walker and his national political ambitions, because that phrase, which pops up over and over and over all over the national news wires, that he's at the center of a criminal scheme, is just terrible for him. And even if right-wing ideologues believe that we should have unlimited spending and that the very wealthy should be able to take over elections because that's their constitutional right, the people of Wisconsin don't like it. And that's why they said in the recent poll that showed Mary Burke polling even with Scott Walker, that a majority of Wisconsinites do not believe Walker represents them. And that's really important here, because when Walker writes directly to Karl Rove in an appeal for funds and says, look, we've got these nine recall elections around the state, they're all being coordinated by my ally and the consultant at Club for Growth, R.J. Johnson, and this is important to you, Karl Rove, because these are congressional districts and we've really got this winning thing going in Wisconsin, he demonstrates in his own words to the public whose interests he's really serving. And it's not the people of Wisconsin. It's his national political ambitions, and it's big money interests from outside the state. And I think that understanding of who Walker really is interested in helping out is the biggest political liability for him.
We will take a short break, and we will take calls from listeners. We have full lines right now. People want to weigh in on this particular issue. During this edition of The Week in Review, we will also talk about other top state and national stories in the news this week, not talking all hour about these court documents released yesterday, but we will talk about things like President Obama saying he's going to be sending military advisors and special ops troops to Iraq to try to quell the violence there, and much more. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network. You're listening to The Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine with David Blaska and Ruth Conniff. Prosecutors say Governor Walker was at the center of a criminal scheme to bypass state election laws during the 2011 and 2012 recall elections. We are talking with David and Ruth about the release of hundreds of pages of court documents in connection to the John Doe investigation and what the political implications of this are. And our first caller on this topic is Joe in Madison. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that this just goes to show that Scott Walker isn't really for the people of Wisconsin. If he were concentrating more on job than he is trying to save his political career time after time again, I think that maybe we wouldn't be 37th in the state for job growth. I mean, those are facts. Regardless of what people are saying the law is, it just sounds bad when you're contacting people from all over the country and coordinating with these organizations to try to skew a vote.
Well, David, what do you say to that?
I guess, you know, if there's, first of all, on this money thing, if money guaranteed success, then I think Eric Cantor would still be majority leader in the House. He was outspent 25-1 by a small college professor that nobody had ever heard of. You know, people make their decisions. And all the money in the world is not going to, you know, didn't get Meg Whitman elected governor of California. She's a billionaire. This whole idea that, but, you know, Scott Walker, they put a recall. And by the way, that recall effort was coordinated by many, many groups. They coordinated. They advertised that. They boasted about all the groups that, in fact, they met with President Obama's campaign. You had groups working together, and this was reported. So you know, I don't know why they get to do it, and but to conservative groups, if they meet together, it's collusion.
You know, we'll talk more about the state's latest jobs or ranking in just a moment. But Ruth Conniff, any comment on this?
Yeah, I mean, Walker broke the law. The reason they've been denying coordinating is because it's illegal to coordinate in Wisconsin. What? Now we have evidence that he, in his own words, was coordinating.
So excuse me. What law did he break? I wasn't aware that he broke a law. Has he been charged? Has he been charged?
There is a law. Well,
has he been charged with breaking a law?
They're investigating it, David.
I know, but she said that he had broken a law.
All right. Well, anyway, the allegation.
It's an investigation in which the prosecutor says Walker was at the center of a criminal scheme. Okay. The prosecutor, a Republican who was shortlisted by George W. Bush for federal judgeship, says Scott Walker was at the center of a criminal scheme. No, you're right. He hasn't been convicted of anything.
He hasn't been charged.
There is an email by Walker, in his own words, in which he is coordinating with these outside groups. He's emailing Karl Rove. He's saying that his point person in Wisconsin, R.J. Johnson, is running this whole Wisconsin operation. So this is the legal issue. So it's clear that Walker has a problem, both legally and politically. And it is true that people from the Club for Growth would like, first of all, they would like this to go away altogether, but they would like for it to be
well,
legal
yeah.
in Wisconsin. They would like for it to be legal in Wisconsin.
They would like to have their freedom of speech back.
Money into elections, but it's not. It's against Wisconsin law to pour unlimited money and to coordinate your campaign operation with outside groups.
That Wisconsin law violates. Excuse me.
Yeah, let all right, David.
Legal is to put some kind of cap on how many millions of dollars in out-of-state money can flow into elections in our state.
You know, I know, David, you want to make
right,
a point,
sure.
but let me frame it a little bit. The judge Randa said, "Hey, freedom of speech. The campaigns were doing nothing wrong here, but the state law said it was illegal. So state law said it was illegal, and that's what's being investigated. He was being investigated
right.
for.
And Judge Randa said the
but
Constitution.
He was being investigated.
He was, yeah. and Judge Randa ruled on that. Judge, I mean, we're
but
talking.
But it's got to be appealed.
Well, sure, anything can be appealed, but Judge Randa ruled that the Constitution trumps any state law that limits the First Amendment rights. He said that the balance scales tip toward the First Amendment for the right of free speech. You know, and I just want to say, I mean, we've got the Center for Media and Democracy. You know, I think you know Lisa Graves, Ruth. In November of 2013,
yeah,
she hosted
publisher.
Yeah, excuse me?
She's our publisher. She's
right.
The publisher of the Progressive Magazine.
Exactly. She hosted a conference call between reporters and statewide. One reporter asked about whether the same activity being investigated in the John Doe had occurred among the liberals and Democratic groups. Lisa Graves, and this is in the court filing, Lisa Graves' response indicated that such activity did occur, but it was distinguishable, she said, because her group are advancing not just an ideological agenda, but an agenda that helps, or the conservatives are advancing not just an ideological agenda, but an agenda that helps advance their bottom line of their corporate interests. So in other words, her interests are more pure than the corporate interests, but she's still doing it.
Reporter, like, that's a lie that's been repeated endlessly in the right-wing media in Wisconsin. It's not true. I'll let Lisa defend herself on that. She didn't make that statement. She said repeatedly what she said. It's all on the record. She never said that the left is pure and the right is not, and there should be different rules. But furthermore,
well, is the left pure? I guess that's the question. I'm asking you if
because of that law.
I'm asking you, are you saying to me and to the listeners here that liberal groups don't talk to each other about elections? What was this?
Talking to each other is not the same as coordinating campaign money. And no, there is a very
coordinating resources?
If I mean, you and I both know a lot of people who work in politics in this state who have been through the caucus scandal in Wisconsin and who know very well what the rules are and that you cannot campaign on the taxpayers' time. You cannot have your communications director, if you're a politician, call up these groups that are running ads and coordinate the message. It's illegal. It's a bright line, and it's the state of law and has been for decades in Wisconsin.
So you're saying that that some of Scott Walker's people, or Scott Walker himself on company time, was raising money?
Well, I mean, that was the first John Doe. that Scott Walker brought a bunch of political hacks and put them in public service jobs in the county in Milwaukee, and they wrote a lot of emails making fun of their constituents and mocking them, racist emails.
There were two emails. There were two emails out of
their campaign.
Out of 1,003.
All right.
Out of 1,400.
This is lively, but we have other callers who also want to add in. Randy in Key Wascom. Hi, Randy.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I mean, you look at this, the same pattern is coming down from Washington all the way down to here. You've got the Democrats in Washington going after their political enemies using the NSA and the IRS, and, yeah, they're destroying their evidence. And you've got a political hack prosecutor in Milwaukee that's been he spends more time going after Republicans than what he does trying to go after crime in Milwaukee. It's all political, and it's one-sided. I mean, you've got the same thing they accuse Scott Walker of is going on with Democratic groups, including a school superintendent that coordinated a fundraiser for Mary Burke on school emails. This stuff is going on the Democratic side. Well, no, we're going to prosecute. I mean, I want to see the emails from John Chisholm coordinating things with, it's amazing how the Democratic Party in Wisconsin knew more about the John Doe 1 than people in the,
All right, thanks, Randy. What about this Ruth? He says it's he's a political hack, and
it's just a list of unsubstantiated accusations. I think what the caller is expressing is a general disgust with politics and money in politics, and I think a lot of us feel that. And I think there's plenty of reason to be mad at Democrats and Republicans alike for running these huge money campaigns and spending a lot of their time fundraising and not representing the interests of the people. But to say that the same thing has happened, that John Chisholm in Milwaukee is somehow guilty of the exact same thing as Scott Walker is simply false. There's no evidence of anything of the sort. And I think it's important to look at what's happened in Wisconsin on Walker's watch and why we are where we are, because we've never seen this level of political hackery and the hijacking of our government and the public interest to serve somebody's national political ambitions and to move a campaign operation into what were once public service jobs. Regular folks at the county level who run the housing department, who serve constituents and the mentally ill. These were political hacks who mocked those people and who were spending all their time raising money and furthering Walker's career. And now, at this stage in this investigation, we see Walker himself reaching out to Karl Rove. We've seen unprecedented money coming in from outside our state to back Walker. And the
result is Karl Rove is kind of a boogie.
The interest of the people here.
Karl Rove is kind of a boogeyman for you, is he?
Because
Koch Brothers. What about the kind of a boogeyman, right? For you, you can say Koch Brothers and they're evil people, right? Is that what they are? I mean, I'll tell you what, the Koch Brothers have signed more union contracts in Wisconsin than Mary Burke has. And they employ more people at better paying jobs. So, I don't know how evil they are. They've got a stake in Wisconsin. They employ about 2,500 people here, many of them union paper mill workers. So you can call them evil if you want to, and I know that Harry Reid, and you're probably reading out of his playbook right now. I'm not saying that you colluded with Harry Reid. I'm not saying you colluded with anyone. But I'm just saying that
things I didn't even say. I mean, people are they have their undies in a bundle because Walker's been caught doing.
Oh,
really,
he's been caught practicing democracy. He's been caught practicing free speech. My goodness sakes, if you can't talk to people who agree with you in this country, I'm talking to people I disagree with you, and that's fine. I think we're being civil about it. But to say then that if I call Scott Walker's office saying, I'm going to be in Kaukauna, I'm going to have a little fundraiser there for that, is he going to be there? That's coordination. I just want to know. I don't want to step on his.
Scott Walker called you and said, "I want you to run this ad for my campaign." And not only that, I have a guy who's coordinating the whole state, and we're going to reach out to these out-of-state billionaires, and they're going to run these ads, and that way we can circumvent, in Judge Randa's words, circumvent Wisconsin campaign finance.
Because those laws violate the First Amendment. We've had so many rulings now on free speech, and why do you not trust the people to sift and winnow this stuff for themselves?
Trust the people.
You don't.
I trust the people, and that's why I don't want billionaires.
Progressivism is ruled by experts.
that.
We, I wish we could talk all hour about this, but the Week in Review says that we have to review all the top stories of the week. We do have, let's see, let's go to new numbers from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics out yesterday, ranked Wisconsin 37th in the nation for job creation in 2013. Is that good enough, David Blaska?
No, I mean, I wish it was higher. That's not a good number. I'm gonna, you know, I have to say that. On the other hand, we were in a bad place. We were hemorrhaging jobs under Jim Doyle, and no one seems to be worried about it. It's been a slow economy. So we still have a few months left on that. I think that's, you know, I don't take Scott Walker's reelection for granted. And I think the economy will, but I think Mary Burke has got a, I mean, I read her jobs plan and it was just mush. It was just like, you know, specifically, what are you going to do? And, you know, do you agree with tax cuts? Apparently not. It's a gimmick. Do you agree with keeping government lean, with giving school districts more authority to innovate, and elected school board members to reward merit? Do you encourage manufacturing? Do you vote against a mine that will employ several thousand workers at the equivalent of $60 an hour with benefits? Do you oppose that kind of stuff? If you're Mary Burke, you do. So I think that's what Scott Walker is going to talk about.
Mm-hmm. 37th in job growth in the nation, Ruth. Is that good enough?
It's not really great for a governor who ran explicitly on the promise to create jobs and on a specific number of jobs, 250,000. This federal report, which is a comprehensive report that's considered the gold standard, shows about 28,000, which is a little less than 250,000. We're at half the rate of growth of the national average, and we're lagging our region. So we're doing really poorly compared to the country and compared to the other states in our area. But the worst number for Scott Walker is the number of jobs created by his flagship job creation agency, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, which, after being plagued by scandal for giving away money, 60% of those funds to Walker contributors, didn't create hardly any jobs. And in fact, there's new numbers, and we've broke this story on our website, The Progressive, crunching the data with the folks who work in the state agencies and look at these jobs numbers. The WEDC can claim to have created about 6,000 jobs during Walker's entire tenure. At least those jobs were developed, the actual jobs, after giving away millions of dollars in the taxpayers' money to corporations. And that is less than half the number of jobs that we lost in the state due to plant closures and layoffs. So the net effect of Walker's job creation agency is disastrous for our economy, and that's why we lag both the nation and our region in jobs.
Let me get you both to react to a couple of other stories in the national media about Governor Walker. The New Republic's cover story this week got a lot of attention, titled "The Unelectable Whiteness of Scott Walker," saying that he can't get enough, minority votes to win the presidency. And saying racial politics had a lot to do with his election and his re-election during the 2012 recall. What was your take on that piece, David Blaska?
Well, it's scoundrel time again. I mean, Samuel Johnson once said that the last refuge of a scoundrel is patriotism. That's been updated now to playing the race card. You know, I read that article. I commented on it. The writer, one example, for instance, is that he vetoed streetcars in Milwaukee when he was county executive. This is an example of racism because black people take the streetcar. Kathleen Falk fought Mayor Dave Cieslewicz of Madison, the Dane County Executive, Kathleen Falk. She did not want streetcars either. She wanted commuter rail, but she did the same thing. Another example in that article is, so Scott Walker gave a speech. I wrote so many speeches for Tommy Thompson, from Superior to Kenosha. So Scott Walker did the same thing. Ah, you see, the city he left out, Milwaukee, full of black people. So he must be a racist. I mean, yes, there were two emails out of 1,400 that were subpoenaed that basically passed along a bad joke, a racist joke, I would call it. Scott Walker didn't do that. He's fired people for that kind of thing. So when it comes to his attention, he has never done that. And he by the way, I think his record in terms of appointing people of color to cabinet positions is pretty strong.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the unelectable whiteness of Scott Walker, Ruth Cunniff?
You know, it is a really dangerous game that the Republicans are playing. And you know, who really noticed that and was sort of had his ears blown back by it was John McCain when he was running for president. And he was at that Tea Party rally with Sarah Palin. And the racism of the people who were cheering for him and the things they had to say about Obama, the signs that they held, just the raw ugliness really took him aback. And that is the problem that the Republicans face. They have this really activated Tea Party base, and they don't want to get really, really close to it because the truth is it's not pretty to see some of what they're stirring up in order to win elections. And on the policy level, we had a piece by Brendan Fisher on our website about the American Legislative Exchange Council bills that are part of Scott Walker's program in Wisconsin and how racially toxic they are. So some of the things that Walker has done in this state that resonate with that base are going after non-existent in-person voter fraud with voter ID laws that make it really hard for people to vote and specifically impact black people, Hispanic people, students, and the elderly who tend to be Democratic voters. And these laws, you know, there's not been a single documented case of in-person voter fraud in Wisconsin, and yet the Republicans, through ALEC, and especially here in Wisconsin, push and push and push on this idea we need to curtail voting, we need to shut down the hours of voting, we need to make it harder to vote on the weekend and after work, and we need to force you to show us an ID to vote, because they know that low-income folks, and especially black folks, are the ones who, in larger numbers, don't have that ID. So that's one. Putting up billboards in Milwaukee warning people of criminal penalties if they vote and it turns out they're ineligible to vote, scaring people away from the polls. I mean, these are the kinds of dog whistle politics that the Republicans practice, and then they try to stay arm's length away from it because the impact of it and the really nasty animus behind it. And when you see footage of some of the rallies and some of the things that they have to say, whether it's about immigrants,
you know, I'm reminded of this. I'm reminded of the Tea Party sign the lady was holding. She said, "No matter what the sign says, someone in the news media will call it racist." You know, first of all, I understand that the party of government needs to have a permanent class of victims. I mean, you know, the Democrats had Sandra Fluke as a primetime speaker at their national convention. Instead of saying, "I'm woman, hear me roar," she says, "Will someone please pay for my birth control?" Republicans don't buy into the idea that you've got to be a permanent victim class. And they're talking about economic opportunity. They're talking about the importance of education. They're talking about getting better schools in Milwaukee and giving people, poor people, black people, Hispanic people, a choice rather than the union encrusted bureaucracy of the Milwaukee public school system. They get to go to a place where the teachers really care about their children. But no, the union-dominated Democratic Party will throttle school choice in its crib.
Yeah,
we
can't talk about school choice right now.
I did a tour of Milwaukee voucher schools where I saw some of these shining examples. One was in an old car dealership. One was in a crumbling office building.
Oh, you know what? And so they didn't have nice paint. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You know, I'm sorry that they
ugly environments where people are making money by taking public dollars to educate children in incredibly bad situations.
I'm going to try to tactfully put this strain of conversation to an end because we need to move on to things that happened this week, and we're quickly running out of time. Well, I wanted to get a quick react to Governor Walker and his Democratic challenger, Mary Burke, sparring over the same-sex marriage issue. Burke said this week that Walker is waffling on whether he believes a gay couple should be able to get married in Wisconsin. But Walker says his position is clear and that Burke needs a lesson in government 101. Because she doesn't understand that the governor can't arbitrarily change the Constitution. So is the governor's position on same-sex marriage clear, Ruth Conniff?
I think he's against it, you know, and I think that he is aware that the tide of history is moving against him, and so he doesn't want to talk about it a whole lot. But this state is one more state that is changing rapidly, and we saw those weddings on the courthouse steps last week. It was really amazing thing to see. So, you know, I think this is an issue that's going to be settled, because there's a whole generation of Americans that think it's ridiculous to deny gay people the same rights as straight people, and it's just not going to last. It's just bigotry, and it's dated, and it's going away.
It took him, the governor a while to then this week affirmed his opposition to same-sex marriage on Wednesday with the most direct comments on the issue since the federal judge ruling on this. What is this a big deal, David?
Well, I Stephen Colbert on Comedy Central, he said that, you know, that the governor believed that gay marriage was a private matter between his conscience and his pollster, a private matter. I'm a conservative, and I said on this show a couple of years ago, Joy, that marriage is what it's always been in every culture, in every part of the world, throughout history. Between a man and a woman. But I also said, and I have no problem with, I mean, I'm not losing any sleep over gay marriage. I'm happy for the people that are happy. I really am. And this idea, Ruth, that you promulgate that we hate people, Well, you just hear the billboards and the whole thing. You just put out the whole thing about Tea Party being ugly. I'm speaking to a Tea Party.
Republicans have a problem because of that.
I'm speaking to a Tea Party group on Tuesday, and they are wonderful, hardworking people, and there's no hate there. So I kind of resent that. I mean, it's just this divisive talk that you keep bringing about people.
McCain, though, David, that you don't really want to be associated with the really down and dirty, N-word using people who hate Obama because he's black.
Well, no, you know what? And they're
both times. I mean, would you be willing to renounce that?
Ruth, you know, do you renounce Satan?
I mean,
if we're going to get religious here.
Right, that's the question.
Look.
These folks are part of the coalition. It's an embarrassment.
Barack Obama got elected president of the United States. And now 41% of the people say only 41% say he's doing a good job. So are they racist, the other 69%?
We'll leave that rhetorical because we have to move on. Coming up, it's our Week in Review quiz. And we're going to talk about some other important national and international stories in the news this week as well. President Obama says that he's sending special forces over to Iraq to try to quell the violence there. And much more. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking with David Blaska and Ruth Conniff this week. And it's time now for our Week in Review quiz. The tallest freestanding flagpole in North America was dedicated on Monday. And it so happens to be located in Wisconsin. In which city does it stand? The tallest freestanding flagpole in North America. If you think you know, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll give you 5 minutes or so to guess, and we'll randomly pick a winner from all of the correct answers, and you will be entitled to a fabulous prize. We'll announce the winner and the answer to the quiz at the end of the Week in Review. All right, well, let's talk about what's going on in Iraq. We had President Obama yesterday holding a news conference, and he said that there would not be ground troops sent to Iraq, but he said that special forces will be sent. Let's take a listen.
Let me repeat what I've said in the past. American combat troops are not going to be fighting in Iraq again.
So is that a relief, Ruth?
Yeah, I don't think there's any appetite among the American public for sending more combat troops back into Iraq. It's just been a disastrous experience. You know, it was an ill-conceived war. It was fought on false pretenses, and it has helped destabilize the whole region and create the disaster that we're in now. And, you know, people just don't, the American people don't have the will to go in. But also, there's no great option there. It's not clear what purpose it serves. I mean, Obama, who looked terrible in that news conference, is in a hideous situation between the Maliki government, which is unbelievably corrupt and has lost the confidence of its military and its people, and ISIS, which is a terrifying, you know, jihadist force that is sweeping across the region now. And, you know, it really shows what a disastrous idea it was to go in the first place, that the cheerleaders for this war, who said it would be over in 3 weeks, that we'd be greeted as liberators, and that we would have this safe, secure, secular democracy in Iraq, were dead wrong. And instead, we have an unstable situation, which Obama himself predicted in a 2002 speech, and now he's in this tragic situation trying to pick up the pieces, and it's a humanitarian disaster, and it's really dangerous.
Oh, so how involved should the U.S. get in Iraq, David?
Well, just on, I'm not going to try to claim any expertise here, but sending in, you know, it reminds me of in Vietnam, I think it was Eisenhower and even that, and followed by Kennedy, who sent in advisors, and that, you know, that soon metastasized into full-blown, because, you know, we had people in Lebanon, and they were, you know, under Reagan, and the Marines were attacked in their base. You know, I've never believed that Iraq is a real country. It was created by the Allies, specifically Britain and France, in 1919, at the end of World War I, when the Turkish Empire was defeated. You've got Sunni Arabs, you've got Shiite Arabs, and you've got Sunni Kurds. The Kurds look like they're going to create their own country. They seem to have their heads screwed on straight. You know, what that does to Turkey. But as far as being the area, you know, being destabilized, yeah, it was, but let's remember that 9/11 occurred well before we went into Iraq under George W. Bush. So that you can't say that that area is very stable if they were hosting that kind of terrorism. And yes, there's been more destabilization since Iraq. Some people will call it the Arab Spring. It's had mixed results, but they just had an election in Egypt. So yes, the area certainly is unstable.
Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. That was the pretext for the war. The idea.
I know. I'm just saying that it was unstable before that route. That's all I said.
9/11 and Iraq are unrelated.
I agree, but I'm just saying it was unstable before the entry to Iraq. Okay.
All right. Well, you're not an expert, David, but
no.
Iraq wants U.S. airstrikes against this ISIS. Should the U.S. get into airstrikes?
I'm going to say I don't know.
Yeah. Ruth?
I think it's a terrible idea. And here's the thing. Iraq, it's not Iraq that wants the airstrikes. It's the Maliki government that wants to be propped up by the United States. The Maliki government doesn't have the confidence of its own people. So the airstrikes would be against ISIS, you know, armed men who are now intermingled with the civilian population. This is a real tinderbox, and the United States already has a terrible, terrible reputation there. So I just, it's lousy to say it, but I don't see a great option here. I think the idea that there are other candidates that could replace the prime minister who would have the confidence, who could be able to bring together the Sunni and Shia population there, that's a hopeful possibility that's very early on. But, you know, I think if there's one thing we learn from our experience of this tragic, long war in Iraq, it's that there isn't an easy answer. The United States can't just fly over and drop a bomb and suddenly we have this wonderful democracy. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
And so now we have a terrible mess that we helped to make. And, you know, it's not going to be solved by an airstrike.
In other news, the capture of an alleged leader of the deadly 2012 attacks on Americans in Benghazi gives the U.S. a rare moment of good news this week, or at least the Obama administration. A lot of people buzzing about this capture. David Blaska, do you think there was some wagging of the dog going on here?
Probably, sure. I think he would have been guilty of malfeasance in politics if he didn't. But you know, that's the power of the presidency, and I'm glad they caught the guy. I'm hoping, though, that that the Benghazi hearings go on. I don't know what you know. We've had 4 years of John Doe in Wisconsin, and they come up with a couple of emails, and but we can't have hearings on Benghazi.
Ruth?
I think it would be hard to say we haven't heard enough about Benghazi if you ever tune into the right-wing media, which is odd.
Have we had a government investigation of it, though?
Well, it's not the news. It goes on and on and on. I mean, this thing has been investigated to death. We have had hearings. We've listened to Hillary Clinton talk about it endlessly. It was her friend that died there. It is a hideous situation. We know everything we need to know about it. And bizarrely, now that the Obama administration has actually caught the perpetrator, the drumbeat goes on, and there's a dismissive tone from these same Benghazi fanatics, as if this part didn't matter. What really matters is showing that Hillary Clinton is somehow the one who committed this horrible
crime. No, Ruth, what I think you're, what does bother people though is this guy is going to be tried in a equivalent of a circuit court rather than as a war criminal.
Well, you know.
Well, what? So what are you saying?
I think that there should be open proceedings, and we should know what's happening, and we should. And I really don't doubt that the Obama administration is going to somehow release this guy to commit more terrorist acts. I don't think that's a danger. But that.
He just released five people in the Bergdahl trade. I mean, I don't see how you can say that. I mean,
this guy is a key terrorist, and we're going to learn a lot about the terrorist network that he's connected to.
Not unless we make him talk. He's going to lawyer up. He's going to lawyer up in the circuit court. You know that.
Okay, let's see what happens.
Well, yeah, all right.
Let's
exactly.
get both of you to comment on the U.S. Patent Office has ruled that the Washington Redskins nickname is disparaging of Native Americans and that the team's federal trademarks for the name must be canceled. The team can retain their trademark protection during a planned appeal. Should that nickname be dropped entirely, Ruth Conniff?
Of course it should. It's embarrassing. You know, it is clearly disparaging. And, you know, it's really time to move on from racial slurs as team names. And I think it's just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm. I saw a picture, I can't, you know, hold it up here, obviously, of Navajo, what were they called? Navajo Code Talkers, I believe it was, World War II. There were five of them. They're pretty old gentlemen. They're dying off. They may all be dead by now. But the picture showed two of them wearing a Washington Redskins jacket. You know, I looked this up a little bit. There's a first perspective. There's some high school sports teams in Oklahoma. And as we know, Oklahoma is a pretty Native American Indian state. In Tecumseh, Oklahoma, and in Broken Bow, Oklahoma, the teams are nicknamed the Savages. In Tecumseh, the population is 13% Native American, and Broken Bow, it's 18%. I guess, you know, maybe Indianapolis, Indiana's got to change its name to something else, too.
You know, the American Indian Museum in Washington, D.C. had a panel on these sports teams' names, and there were a lot of American Indians present, and they invited a representative from the Redskins to come because they're always trying to make this case that somehow Native Americans feel honored and love being called Redskins. They refused to show up because they would have been laughed out of the room. You know, there was an American Indian Movement protest at a Redskins game where a bunch of real live modern day Native Americans showed up and just watched.
Oh, I'm sure there were.
Paint walk in.
You can always find
it
a couple
was
protesters.
So cringingly awful for those fans because the fact of the matter is
I gotta jump in. I'm sorry.
Name.
I got it. We want to congratulate Carrie. Or I'm sorry. It's Carl who is our Week in Review quiz winner. We asked which Wisconsin city is home to North America's tallest freestanding flagpole, which was dedicated this week. And the answer is Sheboygan. Acuity Insurance is responsible for the massive flag. It's 400 feet to, or I'm sorry, pole. It's 400 feet tall and flies a 60 by 120 foot American flag. The stars are 3 feet high and the stripes are 4.5 feet wide. The base includes a veterans memorial featuring the names of Sheboygan County veterans that were killed in the line of duty. So congratulations, Carl. You will win a fabulous prize. You know, I wanted to quickly talk to you. We have about 30 seconds. Either of you, Ruth or David, get affected by six tornadoes that went through the Wisconsin
on
Monday. It
was six blocks from where I live on the west side of Madison. So it was, I got up and then I was awoken. So, yeah.
Yeah, I slept
My
through those.
My car was crushed. It was really sad.
Oh, no. Gosh.
That is.
Well, I hope you both better weather days ahead. Thanks very much for being here. Ruth Conniff and David Blaska. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Christy Taylor for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.